What makes you ask a question about things that are doing themselves? What makes you satisfied or unsatisfied with the answer that you give yourself or someone else gives you? Why the next breath?
There's a lot of suffering around resisting this thing that just keeps moving forward.
That exactly is suffering. Resisting anything is, you know, distressful.
And I think that resistance is what this world is made of.
Yes.
Why there's a world is because we resist.
Wouldn't be a world without resistance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you wouldn't get anywhere without friction.
Yeah, creation is made out of desire. I mean, you know, poetically speaking. When, let's say, a thing that, which is not a thing, which is imbued, though impossibly imbued, with transcendent intelligence, doesn't know itself, and yet it finds this miraculous tapestry of, you know, symptoms and waveforms. And in our case, you know, a neocortex that seems to stream narrative. So, you know, it's preoccupied with itself as itself and in the business of discovering itself. You could say at all levels, right? At all levels of being, photonic and, right, atomic and mineral and chemical, and et cetera, right? Through the various kingdoms of manifestation, including, of course, supermassive black holes. So if it has the slightest inclination of being other than itself, then the only thing it, you could say, is interested in is getting to know itself. And that's what life is. You know, it's just another expression amongst countless expressions of this getting to know itself. It appears from time to time, you know, if we take Rupert Spira's word for it, that it wakes up to itself. Incomprehensibly. Then the whys and the wherefores just, they're gone. Yeah, so this being what it is, if it's anything at all, enjoys or suffers the sensual and ruminative discovery process of what it might be, at least on the scale of what, you know, we refer to as humans.
Some seem to ponder it, some don't.
Some ponder, some don't. Some ponder successfully, most not.
And most, the majority, are just utterly oblivious.
And the majority, yes.
The routine of church and prayers and all this shit, and it's about as deep as a...
Yeah, that's right. If it were a pie chart, you'd have a really, really thin sliver of meringue, which is the pondering group. Everybody else is oblivious.
Yep.
Yeah. and then a thinner sliver amongst the pondering group, which you wouldn't even dare serve a guest, because it's like the film left on the knife, are the successful ponderers. Yeah. You know, I mean, if you're playing a statistics game.
There's a lot of tortured ponderers, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good many. Yeah, most... Well, an unsuccessful ponderer is a tortured ponderer.
Which is where most ponderers are.
Which is where most ponderers are. That's why you're better off staying in the wider field of the pie chart. Just
fuck this.
And yeah.
Just live your life.
That's right.
Yeah, but you can't walk away. Like, I shouldn't say we. I can't walk away. Like, I'm here.
No, if you've been sent an invitation to ponder, that's that. You're a ponderer. You've left the somnambulistic field of the pie chart, the oblivious, the gleeful oblivious, and now you're a ponderer. Fuck.
Well, there was a long phase where I thought I was actually getting somewhere.
The ponderer goes through quite a curious array or barrage of waveforms.
Like about 15 years, I was positive I was getting somewhere.
And to the pondering mind, you were. Until some other quality of mind showed up and you were without, you know, too much nudging, able to relent and see you weren't getting anywhere. But that's progress. That's the maturing of the ponderer, right? Yeah, most ponderers ponder on in the hopes or the self-delusion that they are making progress, that they have acquired excellent pondering skills. I mean...
Or that those skills are going to do something.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the spiritual marketplace is dripping with, you know, hubris and snake oil.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, ponderers do, is they are very excited to learn something about themselves and voyeuristically learn something about other ponderers and create hierarchical structures. Qualitative, quantitative, hierarchical structures in mind, relationship, and experience to place themselves in their own imaginary continuum of how far or how close they might be to their stated goal, which could be walking on water or healing the sick, you know, living forever, or some idea of what enlightenment might be.
Just being able to make, quote, a living off of the other poor suffers that think that.
And smart ponderers that are entrepreneurial,
yeah,
make a living off the poor sucker ponderers that are willing to part with their money on their way to progress.
It's no different than just claw your way at the top in other. You know,
it's the same. It's multi-level marketing, mm-hmm, everywhere you look.
I know about it because I used to do that.
Yeah.
I was so sure I was going to get somewhere. I got nowhere. Either spiritually or in creating my little empire.
Well, some people would say, ha ha, you're a jerk ponderer. Others would say, fewer would say, oh, you're in luck.
I'm really lucky.
Yeah.
I'm lucky I didn't succeed in any of that.
That's exactly right.
Don't quit your day job.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
Some would say, man, you lucked out. Everything you touched turned to shit.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you look again, and it's like, I have nothing to complain about.
No.
I thought I was going to end up top of the heap in some other areas. Because I'm a grasping...
You're like everybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not? There's no point in being special.
Hanging out here, it's helped so much with that. Just like seeing how much better it is to just ditch the special and just be a happy loser.
Yes, I would agree. I concur.
The grasping for special didn't get anywhere and ultimately was showing itself as very painful.
Identity and the pride that accompanies identity is painful.
I think as it starts to loosen its grip, that's painful.
Yes, as it loosens its grip, that's painful too. You know, life happening to me, painful. As concerns, you know, body, mind, stuff, feelings, pride, entitlement, respect, acknowledgement, validation, you know, all the things that were they running on more than 1.5 cylinders might make a human hum a little more gracefully. You know, that's what they say. Trying to smooth out the wrinkles of living through whatever means if you're lucky, it's going to fail. If you're not lucky, it might appear as if you've made, you know, some progress. You've acquired some tools or maturity or some understanding where you can manage, you know, the tidal forces of life with more grace, more ease, more forgiveness, more gratitude, more compassion, more whatever. But you're better off, really, failing at all those.
It feels like the failure is on me like flies on shit, and I'm holding on so tight to the things that seemingly work.
Oh, yes.
That there's, it's like a noose.
Yes, that's right. It is a noose. Uh-huh. Individuation, momentum of self, on the bracing and the strategizing that accompanies it, the justifications and the need for justifications that accompany it, R is a noose. But that's the what's the phrase, you know, the thing that you know versus the thing that you don't know?
Mm-hmm. Status quo.
Consciousness misapprehends itself. And that, you know, you could call it a design flaw, but you could also say, yeah, it makes perfect sense. Our so-called experience seen and felt through the lens of separation and individuation is a misapprehension. The companion and contrary possibility of seeing or sensing this on, call it more accurate, more sensible, more authentic, more subtle tones, that turns out to be so freaking strange for what we call, you know, the common ego mind, that it is unconsciously rejected. Reality on its terms is unconsciously rejected by the presumed person. Too threatening. You know, the movement of orientation is the genesis or expression of self. The raw material, the raw euphoric material of simply being, whatever that means, and it doesn't need to mean anything special. You could say that euphoric sensitivity is unencumbered by the quantifying, qualifying, and orienting mind, the movement of self-referencing and narrative, the movement of justification, the reasons why. You know, it's hard to plan a banquet if you don't know why you're having it or who you want to invite. You see how easily, you know, whatever mind is, projects, right, sense of self in future scenarios, imbued with, you know, pleasant and preferable circumstances, or braces against and regrets that same kind of projection if the projection is injury or loss. Yeah, so we're conjuring psycho-emotional, psychosomatic states that respond to the movement of imagination as future.
You can watch them come and go and flip-flop. Like I can see them flip-flop from hour to hour, moment to moment, from
Yes.
Yeah, this is good. It's rocks, too. Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
It just changes the balloon.
Yeah, no, it's promiscuous in that it has no particular loyalty to any particular direction or intention. Yeah. Yeah, it squirms and flips and entertains and insults and inflates and, you know. Yeah. Wow. And that movement of, you know, sentience, sensation, mind, assignment, identification, individuation, scenario, creation, those are, you could say, all contribute to, or they are exactly the same as, the hypnotic idea of one's self, one's belongings, one's education and children and people you care for and people you don't care for, and what your priorities are, how you roll, you know, politically, spiritually, and privately, and whether you're loyal to your spouse or not, and whose fault it is if you're not. Whether you're still smoking cigarettes, but you don't want anyone to know. You know, or still drinking, but, you know, it's not much. And I still go to meetings and take credit for my 10-year chip. All is fair in love and recovery. Present experience makes no, it doesn't make any demand except that it is unbearably demanding. Right? The breath is a demand. The thirst is a demand. Hunger is a demand. Right? Temperature is a demand.
Yeah.
Sleep is a demand. Elimination is a demand.
Yeah, just try to resist any of them. It'll give you trouble.
Just show me how special you are.
Yeah.
Just how much self-willed, self-determinism, and choice you have when it comes to, you know, biological demand.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the demand of mind, the demand of imagination.
Mm.
Yeah, how you doing with that?
Entertain me. Entertain me now.
Yep. Yeah.
I don't care if you're tired. Like,
yeah.
Do something about it. Like,
that's
it's
right.
Just demanding.
Yeah, and we thought the cat was just some kind of, you know, animal. Look at us. Yeah, entertain me. Entertain me now. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, stop the level movement.
Yeah.
This has got to go. You got to, like, make some space.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're funny. We, you know, all these demands come pouring in with greater and lesser, you know, insistence. We respond to perhaps all of them, most of them, semi or unconsciously. And yet we can, you know, look in the mirror or convince each other that, oh yeah, I choose. I decide. You're like, what? What? So it's enthralling as it is disorienting to for consciousness to mature sufficiently, and by mature I mean ease up, slow down, be considerate of itself. Yeah.
Aging, like, helps with that.
And aging and hormones and maturing, yeah, they all contribute, of course.
I don't know how anybody gets any sense of this at a younger age. I don't know. questions.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah, it's hard to know, you know, what it is that's wafting through the collective consciousness or whatever humans are that might be permitting, you know, younger people to get a keen sense of it, even though their urgency for life and hormones and future and, you know, mm-hmm. is strong. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thinking about why, you know, why I was coming every night and why I would go away on Sunday for another retreat. It's like I'd sell my soul for just a taste. I thought ayahuasca down in South America would do the trick. Mm-hmm. I'd be down there.
The taste of?
What I think I've had, remember having a taste of before.
Yeah.
Pure version of this.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
Yeah. Yes, I'm not still satisfied with just what's in front of me. I'm still looking for an angle.
Yeah.
Help to see clear. I've gotten a lot of little nudges though, but I'm just wandering around and wander a lot. I walk, but you know. And that's that time outside, just looking around.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as close to anything as I'm ever going to get. And it's no different than this.
Yeah, you can see how a certain patina of restlessness, self-consideration, you know, seeking, pondering, still has a certain quality of momentum.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that it's able to sell you a ticket.
Yeah, I'm still buying it.
Yeah, and that's yeah, that's, you know, that's just weird. I mean, that's the way this is. It's just perfectly involuntary. You can't
fade away.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very difficult to, you know, measure with any accuracy, you know, where we were a minute ago.
Mm.
Let alone, you know, over the course of years.
Mm.
It's very subtle, you know, the craving that just wafts up, arises all by itself, and solicits awareness, attention, and, you know, offers a story, offers an invitation. You know, you want to buy a watch, you want to buy a ticket. And then there's some, you know, weird association that's like, yeah, you know, I'm not done, or I'm not perfected, or I'm not at ease, or whatever, or I'm adventurous and I'm curious and I like to mix it up and I like changes in venues and weird people to hang out with to talk about spiritual shit. So any strange combination of, you know, a positive curiosity or fatigued, you know, I'm not making any progress in any mixture of, you know, vat-sized will just show up and encourage something.
A strange sense of being able to, I wouldn't say even being able to, but like creating shit. I have memories of where for long stretches I was like, I want that. And eventually I'd get it. Kind of weird.
It sure can appear that way, yeah. Yeah. Wanting something, wanting it, you know, long enough, repeatedly enough. Then whether it shows up or not, who knows?
Yeah.
And then whether you actually enjoy it in the way that you anticipated that you would, or whether it's just another albatross.
Mm-hmm. I have a pretty specific memory of when I first became aware of, and I was a seeker before this time, but when I first became, like it impressed me that maybe some people had had success because they had a guru. And
yes.
I remember specifically wanting a teacher, like an in-person with, you know, skin kind of teacher.
Yeah.
And sure, shit, I kind of found one. Didn't work out in the long haul, but hey, found one. Acquired a few others along the way.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's fun to have a certain, you know, kind of conversation to look at life in a novel way. To pursue, you know, Gnostic possibilities.
As the main thing like that faded, I really, really wanted some local community. This popped up.
Yeah. Well, then blame it on you. What the hell were you asking me what I'm doing here? It's all your fault.
I want to put it on somebody else. We have answers over there. Come on. With the guy in front of the newsstand. It is funny how this rolls. Why can't we try to marry? Sure feels like I suffer sometimes.
Why not?
Without good reason. I mean, that's stuff like that. The funny part of it, I don't have any real reason to suffer.
Yeah.
Created fiction.
Yeah. This just wants to feel. It doesn't care what the feeling is. You might. It doesn't.
I have a preference for two or three.
Yeah. This just wants to feel.
Yeah.
You know, with quite wild abandon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the biological unit that actually feels the feeling, you know, call it in a right sensual or somatic manner, ends up with a lot of, you know, preferences. Hi.
Big crowd tonight.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't even see your car behind whoever's car that was. I was like, are they even here?
Of course.
Yeah. Next Thursday at Felt Forum.
What's that?
It's a huge venue in New York City, but how does the Square Garden?
A joke.
Yeah, we're selling out.
I haven't been here in weeks.
Yeah. Nothing's changed. We still talk about you behind your back. Don't tell me that's your favorite club soda.
It is. Is it?
Really?
I don't know. What do you mean, really?
It's so good with other things. I like it mixed with shit.
I know, dude. I just like it. It's sort of gross, like Alizar, but I don't know. I really like it, yeah. And all the other things you can mix it with are like mostly just bad for you. It's like you mix it with like sugar or alcohol. It's like
sugar and alcohol, yeah.
Alcohol, that, you know, it's mixed straight. You know?
Yeah, I'll just take it straight.
I mix it with, not that brand, but I mix something like that with homemade kombucha at work. It looks just like a beer.
Yeah.
People are like, are you drinking?
That would work. Kombucha
it's
and
like a
canned dry.
Kind of thing.
I mean, this is like, I mean, I probably would rather like drink kombucha, but it's like, it's just like alcohol and shit, too.
Yeah.
It's like, I'll just drink the, like, just the bubble, nothing else, that's it.
Yeah. And, cold chicken. So we're talking about same old suffering, you know.
Suffering, not suffering. What's the difference?
Why haven't we found it?
So you see, apprehension percolates up like bubbles in a Canada Dry bottle. And convinces itself, you, that you're in or of the nature of a condition. And you could say immediately, non-dually, concomitantly, this pulsing apprehension, quality of apprehension. Apprehension, in this case, I really mean apprehending, right? Not apprehension as fear or reluctance. Apprehending.
Like to grab it, to grasp at it, to
yes.
Label it, make it mine. Is that what you mean?
Those, see how quickly it happens, yes, right? The labeling and the mine and the apprehending of bubbles percolating up through the plenum of consciousness lend themselves spontaneously to the articulation of I.
Mine.
And I is mine. Yeah. Yeah. And so this I that is mine, which just blossoms, you know, moment to moment, like it were a perfect spring day after a perfect spring rain, makes us, itself, us, feel some kind of insufficiency. In other words, the bubbling up of apprehending that which is found in the wave form and the I and the mind are immediately unsatisfactory. It's dukkha to go, dukkha on demand, involuntarily. Dukkha on demand, involuntarily. Everything that is sponsored or thought of is downstream of that very curious, perhaps miraculous flowering, blossoming. So we'll blame ourselves, our family, our upbringing, our socioeconomic class, our, you know, I mean, I, not to dismiss how much, call it genuine suffering there is in a world of 7-point-something billion vying for declining resources under the, right, umbrella of all forms of political opportunism and totalitarianism. So yeah, we're fucked. Despite all that, not that it's, you know, not that it's easy to dismiss and nobody wants to be cavalier. You know, we're honing in on a certain kind of Gnostic examination, Gnostic alchemy. Exploring the effervescing of I, me, mine, and the accompanying dissatisfaction, insufficiency, that blossoms into being. So I will find that same existential unsatisfactoriness in all things. Because it's so fundamental to the texture and quality and the roving nature of consciousness itself, that in all things will be found, will be mirrored, this fundamental existential unsatisfactoriness. Now, in the animal rescue business, you know, amongst human institutions, self-esteem, addiction, recovery, post-traumatic stress syndrome, eating disorders, everything, right? Byron Katie sells to that crowd. Eckhart Tolle sells to that crowd. Everyone sells to that crowd. Buddhism sells to that crowd. Killaby sells to that crowd. Paul Hederman sells to that crowd. Peter Brown, not so much. So that's the animal rescue crowd. And that's a big crowd. You know, that's a large target market. All of which is symptomatic of a fundamental, quieter and more subtle unsatisfactoriness that we generally fail to see, fail to notice.
It gets more noticeable, I think. Time goes on.
Yeah.
More and more noticeable.
We would like it to. So, like,
what's not at ease is just stands out more.
Yeah. Yes. Right. So, this fundamental, you could say, unsatisfactoriness without specific quality hungers for qualities. Basically, it hungers for justification of its own.
So that's not like a quality itself, like the unsatisfactoriness?
No. I mean, by using the word, it's, of course, qualitative.
It seems like at least the recurring feeling.
Yes, yes, yes. But see that, right, the recurring feeling is some kind of subtle valuation, evaluative recognition of... Right.
A meta piece of shit.
That's right. It's a meta.
When you look everywhere, I see shit. The whole thing is...
It's shit. You are a meta piece of shit. My work is done here. Yeah.
I'm talking about a compliment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You see, mind is capable of promoting and projecting, asserting and assigning all the reasons that the world sucks or my experience is sucking. And it creates the assignment. Now, then it imagines that what it has found or accused itself of is true. And so it misses entirely the underlayment of meta or qualitative less unsatisfactoriness, which is there simply because of the mirage of divisiveness, the mirage of separation, the mirage of self and other. Yeah, and that mirage is launched, you could say, from moment to moment and is very subtle. So we end up missing that, not knowing how to cope with or articulate it. So it doesn't exist, actually, for us. But what exists is the litany of complaints that I can recognize, the litany of complaints that I basically make sense of. That's what's wrong. You're like, no, those are just superficial excuses of something that is more curiously profound than the, you know, phenomenal discordance. And that's why the animal rescue business is so large because everyone is negotiating with their imagination of what's not correct. Because you can. It's much easier to negotiate with your imagination. How do you do a JYN on the underlayment of consciousness? You got nothing. The dukkha is there. The unsatisfactoriness is there, accompanying the anthropomorphization of apprehending. It's there. But we don't notice it because it's meta or subtle. It doesn't have a big quality field. It's impossible to do a judge your neighbor and turn it around on separation, on existential separation, because it has no quality.
But the philosophy behind that, it's the same as what was mentioned in A Course in Miracles as well, as you were, you'd be totally fucked if you didn't have your perception of this world to work with. But because you can work with what seemingly is outside yourself, you've got some chance of unraveling what this is.
Okay, you know, from an ACIM point of view, that sounds, you know.
That's not like if you have a problem, you can fix that problem because you had a problem to begin with. Like,
yeah, it's a little bit.
It seems like a bit circular, I don't know.
It's a bit circular, yeah, but ACIM is largely circular. Yeah.
It's kind of like the world outside yourself is just here to help you find your way back. And it's going to piss you off and fuck with you and do all the things the world outside yourself does.
Sure.
Until you finally kind of figure out what it, I guess, really is.
Yeah. I mean, you know, sage advice from, you know, the trans girl that was channeling it.
I wouldn't say that's really what it says. That is just being reminded.
Yeah.
Well, I sort of remember.
It's fair enough. Fair enough interpretation of, yeah, Course in Miracles. Yeah. See, every, you know, every cosmology, every channeled piece of work, whether it's that or, you know, Blavatsky or Seth or, you know, fucking Rompha or
Seth's shit.
Abraham Hicks.
The Hicks. I go on and on. You know, all of it is, well, ultimately dependent upon the vehicle, the medium, and the purveyor of, you know, how it was crafted. And, of course, how it lands in its, you know, in the reader. And so it becomes ultimately useless. Except as another orientation tool. But the orientation tools only last so long. I mean, if you're really being nudged along, then any orientation tool that you find and become fond of and or certified in and or write a book of commentary about the original, you know, author, it will fail. And that's a good thing. Because you don't need it to begin with. See, you only turn to remedies once you are convinced, through no effort of your own, that you need a remedy for something.
About to get spidered.
Ooh, thank you.
We'll see if it comes back.
It has a new target.
Oh, yeah, it looks like it. What is it? It's like a daddy long leg.
It's got a smaller body.
It's different than a daddy long leg.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a different kind of spider.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I would not have been happy if it crawled.
It was crawling.
It would have been entertaining if you were watching it.
Ooh, oh.
I appreciate your mercy.
So, of course, in Miracles is right.
Absolutely right.
It's got to be shitty and it's got to fail you.
There's too much pressure placed on the student of Course in Miracles to, by virtue of will, study, repetition, you know, free themselves from the chains of the imaginary ego. It's just too much pressure. It can't yield that much fruit.
Speaking of pressure, did you guys see that Eagles fan in the whatever post game riot where he ate horse poop?
No.
I heard of it. I didn't thankfully watch it.
It's not gruesome or anything, but the crowd was chanting, like, "Eat it, eat it."
Why on earth would an Eagles Super Bowl victory lead to the
eating horse shit?
Eating horse shit.
People are just crazy.
It's Philly, man. They're just fucked. Here they are.
Okay.
Other useless non-spiritual.
Glad I missed that one. Maybe next lifetime. See, if you have an idea, you need to sign up for a retreat.
A retreat's coming up, man.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I leave on Sunday for North Carolina.
There you go.
It's the same woman I was with when I was in Colorado. It was torture.
Just going back again.
Oh my god, I was going back again. I'm like, what? Really?
If you find anything at all, you need to sign up for a retreat. See, that's how subtle it is. That's how quick it is. The slightest hint of identification is the slightest hint of individuation. The slightest hint of individuation means you are now a product of, as a recipient, so-called recipient of the sensorial realm. And what do you find? Unsatisfactoriness.
All the way down.
Yeah, but it's a very subtle unsatisfactoriness. You can't pin the donkey's tail on it. You can't come up with you can't articulate a whole bunch of well-formed complaints about a very subtle presentation of separation. You wouldn't know how to fill out the JYN. You wouldn't know where to begin. But that's okay, because you get a million symptoms that come soon thereafter of everything that pisses you off.
Well, you can always find something.
Yeah, that's right.
If it's free-floating, like, what the fuck, if you can't even pin it on anything, you move on with your day and you'll eventually find something.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. So we get, you know, we easily get lost in the labyrinth of the inventory of dissatisfaction. And then we become hyper-focused on circumstances and events and the things that we want to hold responsible for our, you know, irritability. For our compulsion. Then you're a card-carrying member of the animal rescue team. Like that. And you're in luck because you've got millions, if not billions, of friends that are happy to commiserate with you about everything that's wrong with everything else.
Or what to do about it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it does seem like you can make some headway, though.
Well, we do appear to mature just a little bit. I think slower than the oceans are rising in Miami. Yeah. Yeah, it's not like one is under siege 24/7. Though I have met some people that scared the shit out of me that were appeared to be under siege like 24/7. You know,
under siege, just like constantly fucked up,
right? Yeah, like addicts. You know, addicts that.
Wouldn't know any of those people.
I know. We're just under siege.
Yeah.
You know, I was scared. Just scared the bejesus out of me.
Yeah.
Like, you're suffering that much on 11 all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm an amateur compared to that.
Yeah, you're an amateur. That's right. Compared to that.
Oh, here, I have a question.
Yes.
How many times have you lived manic? Just the one?
After which one?
My friend has been manic once, at least once, I know, years ago, when we were like 18. Mm-hmm. And he like didn't know what was going on. And he was like, I just give you some idea. The other friend of mine you met, Ryan, was like laying on a couch mm-hmm. or something, and like about to go to sleep, and like our other friend who's manic that comes up to me and is like, all right, close your eyes. And he's like, I'm like, trying to go to sleep. He's like, I'm gone. I'm like, he's like, yeah, just close your eyes right now. I got to show you something. He's like, why? He's like, okay, hold on. He closes his eyes for 2 seconds, opens them, and he has a chair over him. He's like, oh, it's just a joke, huh? And we're like, what the fuck? He's like, I wasn't going to hit you. And we're like he's thinking, like, he didn't fucking open his eyes. Like, was he going to smash with the chair or what? So he was, like, really out of it. So now he's, like, back, like, manic again.
Mm.
And I don't know if it happened, you know, between now and then, but at least this time he, like, knows that, like, he's like, oh, I haven't, like, slept more than, like, 2 hours or whatever, blah, blah. So, like, he knows, like, what's happening, and he, like, says, like, you know, he, like, went to see a psychiatrist, and they gave him some medicine, whatever, but, like, I have no way of, like, verifying these statements.
He needs to get to a doctor.
So he, like, says he has.
Especially if he's had a break before. Is he sleeping?
I mean, I don't really, like, know. I mean, he's, like, his girlfriend, like, doesn't seem, like, alarmed by it, but, like, she's not the, like, most stable person either, but... I, like, questioned him because he, like, wrote this, like, quick paper on, like, about how he understands the whole universe. And, like, it's just going off about, like, electrons and consciousness mm-hmm. and DMT, and he just understands everything. And, like, he's like, I want you to critique it. So I, like, critiqued it, and I'm like, you know, I pretty much broke it down to, like, that, like, none of this really connects or, like, makes
much
any sense,
he's
you
out
know?
There.
Oh, and man.
He's out there.
But I wasn't worried because he was, like, strangely, like, not, like, pliable, but, like, open to, like, criticism. So I was like, you seem like everything's okay, but
you know, you can be manic and be crazy in lots of different ways.
Yeah. So before he was like not pliable and not, he would be like, you know, thought he was like really onto something. I mean, I guess in the end he still was like, you know, I can't communicate if I know. And I'm like, all right, you know.
There's a gentleman, earlier student of Peter's that understood the universe better than everyone. And had more 3x5 cards than, you know, the Library of Congress to prove it.
But were they manic?
No, they seemed pretty chill.
Mm.
That's scary.
Yeah.
That's scarier.
That's
if
scarier.
You don't sleep a bunch and you get yourself all wound up, that makes at least make sense to me. Like, oh, man.
Mm. Yeah.
But if you're just, like, chilling when you think that, that's scary.
Mm. Mm.
But I mean, he said he went to see a psychiatrist. And
I would check with his girlfriend and see if.
I mean, I think she would have like raised the alarm, but like, you know, she like we weren't like talking directly, but like she was there, like, you know, I was talking to him, didn't like say anything, heard the entire conversation, didn't say a word.
Mm-hmm.
I guess like it's got to be like good.
Did they live together?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think yeah, she would have said something. I mean, I don't see like some alarm. I didn't seem alarmed by it, but I just want to make sure like I'm not like. Missing something, he's about to go do something like super dangerous, you know. I guess you never really know, but like, doesn't sound like that bad, right?
I don't know.
Because he was like, I know I have to sleep, but like, I just can't.
If someone that's had a manic episode stops sleeping for any reason.
Yeah.
And by the time they get that far out there, they're not going to have any perspective.
I wish him well. When we go on retreat, generically speaking, meaning not just an appointment to go to a place and hang out with some interesting people, you know, but when we seek to gather or acquire knowledge or experience, then, right, we are departing or departed from what this already is. So my experience of what this already is, in the way that I'm experiencing it, is less than, somehow less than, right? And so I make a gesture to read a thing, to meditate, to take medicine of one or several kinds, to have a conversation, to go somewhere, right? I go in search of. And that's just fucking that. That's just that. I mean, how could I possibly reroute, change the texture of what I'm taking present experience to be? If I'm taking present experience to be in a certain way, and there's, you know, the slightest hint of insufficiency or lack or anything that I might be missing, I might be without, I will go in search of.
Seems to be the whole driving force for life.
Yeah.
Going on.
I think that some of that fades away. There's a lostness to it. There's a, like, what does have meaning? What does make this, like, it's a lack of faith that it's going to hum anyway, whether you're grasping to fill it up or not. With me.
Yeah, if we take the Knights of the Round Table point of view, right, we go in search incessantly of some kind of holy grail or some kind of king, queen, knight, or magician that will provide us with what's missing. Like, for instance, Dorothy and the three traveling companions in The Wizard of Oz. I could use a brain, I could use a heart, I could use some courage. And she just wanted to go home to Kansas. So that's us. Right? This becomes very intimate between you and you, or between you and this, between what you take your present experience to be and what it might actually be. And then you're the one, of course, still involuntarily speaking, that imbues this or perceives that, yeah, there's a Wizard of Oz out there. And I'm going to risk the poppy field to find him or her.
Risk the poppy field.
Yeah, yeah.
Really. Find the wizard?
Fuck the wizard. Let's just go to the poppy field. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So if some kind of blatant suffering is not motivating me, some other kind of subtle, right, unsatisfactoriness or curiosity or hoped for validation or something, which I can't quite put my finger on, is out there waiting.
That's my jam. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah. Yeah.
I almost moved to Colorado to find it.
So there you go.
I'm out of a lot of trouble. I came to my senses.
I might marry someone to find it. I might divorce someone to find it. You know, I might go to a guru to find it. And after some years of, you know, sodomy, I might rethink that.
It's funny. That is sadly really true.
It is sadly really true. So, you know, there's something very vulnerable about, we call it, you know, the human psyche or human development that creates this dependency relationship and codependency on someone in some kind of authoritative position, whatever knowledge they may possess that we think we want, and the sacrifices that we will make to secure that knowledge, and what fires we'll go through to, you could say, earn the privilege of receiving it. And this is all the archetype, right? Whether it's the man from La Mancha or Howdy Doody or the Three Musketeers or on and on and on and on, of this same curious, what we're referring to as a more subtle meta or metaphysical irritability. Like, we think this is something and I don't have all of it.
Got me more here.
I don't have all. This is something. I am something. This is something. I am something. And I am not in possession of all of it. So I think I'll call my travel agent. Because somewhere out there, whether it's Jackson Peterson or Adyashanti or whomever, someone is pretending to have more of it than I have. Someone is pretending to have more of it than I have by virtue of the books that they've written, the audiences that gather around them, the spiritual experiences that they claim to have had, the way that they articulate mystical comicry to make it appear as if you'd benefit from this too.
Well, it's less about what they claim to have and more about what happens in my experience when I'm alone.
Okay. Yeah. I know that well enough.
The poppy field.
The poppy field. Yeah. You're in the poppy field. Yep. Right. So if the poppy field really worked,
I wouldn't be going back over and over.
I know.
Second best thing though, right?
Okay. If it is, for as long as...
Beggars can't be choosers.
Yes, agreed. For as long as the poppy field is the second best thing...
What's the first best thing?
Hit the poppy field.
Being poppy less. They're doing some, all right?
Being poppy less is better than the poppy field. But see, that's this. That turns out to be exactly this. But, or and... what is the fairy dust or the magical formula, were there one, where this presents itself to itself, let's say with you as the witness, right? Because every marriage needs, you know, witness, two witnesses. So this presents itself to itself with you as the witness, and it's like, I am the poppy field. What is that? I mean, what does it take for you to fire your life coach? You know? Hello? Yeah, you're fired. Click. So you look at that, you look at or can consider, just for sport, there's no profit in it, for sport only. What's the nature, what's the language, what's the texture and the feeling of some craving that arises that convinces you that someone or something elsewhere other than now and other than here has something more than you do?
It's the H word. Hope. That's poison.
I don't know.
Feels everything.
Hope might be downstream of the original sin. Because first you have to be convinced that someone or something has more of this than you do. Then there's the hope that you'll find them or it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I'm not.
I mean, it's just like specificity. It's like, I want some parts of this. You know,
absolutely.
Fuck the rest.
Yeah. Absolutely. So specificity, right, arises again in concordance with finding anything at all. It's not like, oh, I found a bunch of stuff, but I'm pretty chill about it. And then, whoa, now I'm suffering from specificity. It's instant on. The whole delusion is instant on. By pounding on it.
It's in the lobotomy.
Well, I might suggest that these kinds of conversations is a slow
spiritual lobotomy.
Slow lobotomy. It can be a little arduous, yeah. It's an arduous lobotomy. I mean, the other one we'd get arrested for. So, you know, we have to settle for second best once again. Clearly, I'm not responsible. You're not responsible for what appears to arise as the conjuring of some kind of insufficiency. It's just, yeah, what? It's just there. It's just there. And the response to it, you know, as the oblivious become the ponderers and the ponderers, you know, turn up the heat. It's like also completely automatic. Now, you could say one of the kind of curious things that keep us in the game as the right ponderer, seeker, is the imagination it will find something. Because, you see, we think this is something. We think I am something. So it's something that I'm after.
Something for me. Usually.
Yes, of course, right. Something for me. Yeah. And I will shell out, you know, the money when I can, when I find a, you know, snake oil salesperson that is telling me what I think it is I need or want to hear at that particular time in my life, usually serendipitously found to go to the next step, you know, chutes and ladders. But if this isn't anything, and it's not about anything, and neither is the wild perturbation of so-called your experience also not about anything. Really, if it's not about anything, who knows more than you do? Who could? Who has more than you have? Who could? So as long as this is about something, which usually means it's about me, and this existential unsatisfactoriness is felt and suffered without quality, then I have to move toward someone or something, some group, some your book of your rancher that knows more than Madame Blavatsky and the secrets of the soul know more than I do, right? And therefore you are entrapped, instantaneously entrapped.
So it just brings you back to just you're suffering, that's it?
Well, sure, if that's all you can find, you know, is suffering, then hang with that.
Well, hang with that, and then another moment later it changes and it's gone. Like, it's not ever just sticks.
Nothing sticks. You can't get that much mileage out of your suffering unless you're really pathological, in which case not that many people can help you anyway. Right? Yeah. So, I mean, really, to see how promiscuous and darting, non-committal, unloyal consciousness actually is in your experience. You're like, I'm not that well put together. I'm just fleeting bullshit stitched together by the likes of me to make it look as if I've got a stance or something, you know, that I'm about. It's a confidence game, both from the point of view of being conned and discovering
how fucking dense you are.
Yes, how dense you are, yeah, for sure. And something that releases you from the presumption, the iterative, apparently iterative presumption that your insufficiency is real, that someone or something has or knows something that you don't, that they're living in a way that you envy. That you want. And that's why we'll sign up for the next retreat. And not just the formal retreat, but the, you know, the next impulse, right? Mm. The next desire to get, to apprehend, to have different experience, to extract what it is that I don't have from this. You know, you can say for fun is, you know, is the root of all self crises of self-esteem, crises of codependency, crises of trauma bonding.
Well, it is very fucking convincing that it is something.
Yeah.
And even if it is just a dream world, like, I mean, it doesn't really change much. You know, stub your toe doesn't feel good. The poppy field does feel good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Pretty cut and dry.
What you call this, you know, it's not important how it, right, you know, affects you. On a more practical level, is, you know, that's going to be more of a driving force.
Yeah.
Well, so yeah, you can peer into the fabric of what we call humanity and, like, oh, fuck. We're all, you know, driven, influenced, seduced by this tapestry of forces, biologic, identity, somatic, emotional, validation, tribal needs, so-called, you know, thirst for transcendence. Each of us to varying degrees, varying interests, according to who knows what complement of elements make us us.
No sense fighting it.
Yes, from one lofty point of view, a practical point of view, there's no sense fighting it. But that's not going to stop you from fighting it when you fight it, in the ways that you fight it.
It's like most of life is just a negotiation.
And that negotiation is generally superficial, most often untrue, and always after the fact.
Well, that's encouraging.
That seems clear. I mean, aren't my justifications and excuses, defenses, and everything always late? Always after the fact? The mind is a referential system, or at least aspects of what we call mind is reference. So since it's reference, meaning it's representational and behavioral, attitudinal, right, and made out of preference and discernment, always has to be laid. Whose voice is it? And from whence it came that whispers to me, oh yeah, this is not enough. This isn't it. This isn't the all. This can't be it. Gotta be more. Right? Whose voice is it? And what evidence is it relying upon? to make such audacious claims? And then how do we agree with it so easily? Not so easy to peer into the process of reification in consciousness and really pull the curtain back from how my own sense of identity operates. Not that many folks want to look that cleanly at it.
Not pretty.
It's a little disturbing, not a lot, unless it is a lot, but it's a little disturbing. But if we're doing a, you know, slow cut lobotomy with a butter knife.
That would appeal to someone.
Yeah, then you don't really have a choice than to see how my own nature operates, how my own sense of identity actually, arises or emerges from nothing at all. It is existentially unnerving. Because it's easier, let's say, or at least more, relaxing in a sense, that I not know that I'm arising improvisationally and involuntarily from nothing at all. Best not to know that.
My mornings are so rough, like coming in from nothing into something, like for no good reason. It's like, why is there anxiety there? Mm-hmm. Not off the charts, not permanent.
It's yeah, right.
And then
yeah.
Get up, get moving, and
yeah.
Gone.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
That's right.
Like, I can't put my finger on why.
Well, that's makes sense, because you could say in that transition, right, from the ease of sleeping, or the roving mentation of dreaming, etc., to being the body and the life on the clock, right? Yeah. With all the immediate hologram of oneself, you get to see and sense the irritability and the dukkha that's nonspecific.
Totally
nonspecific. Yeah, you see the arising of the imagination of self, the hologram of self, let's say moving from dreaming or semi-dreaming to, about to have a reason to get out of bed. There it is. And you can sense the unsatisfactoriness of it, which is nonspecific. But that's in this business, in the business of Gnostic alchemy that is designed to lobotomize you all the way to nirvana, you have to see it. Can't skip over that. You have to see it. You have to see this forces you. It does. It forces you. You could say invites, but that's euphemistic. It forces you to see that you are made out of nothing. And you no, I don't want to see that. Because now you can't convince yourself otherwise. Like any good supermassive or even modestly sized black hole, the attracting force is impossible to escape. You know, you can get so close to the event horizon and think that, oh, yeah, I can walk away from the edge at any moment. It's like, oh, fuck! You see? You're like, you got too close to the event horizon, like some people get too close to the volcano. And now you're going down the, you're going down the tube. So on the way down the tube, you see this gifts you with the view that you don't want to have, that you're not made of anything. That your existential disquietude is non-specific. That you're peering through the imaginary fabric of separation and individuation and the ongoing presumption that someone, something elsewhere other than now has more than you do. Who signed up for that shit? You know, look, our dear Byron Katie went through it in her own dramatically, over dramatically cathartic way, because she's such a loon, you know. And if only we could take our clothes off and find a jar of cockroaches, maybe, you know, we could luck out like she did. Find an attic, take your clothes off, have a close friend, just drop a jar of cockroaches all over, and maybe one will crawl against your ass.
Over your foot.
Over your foot. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm not that drastic.
You don't need to be.
I haven't gone that far.
Yeah, that's right, you know. It makes for a good story, but it's like, that was... Okay, thanks.
I don't think everybody goes that far.
No.
Not necessary.
The same alchemy is going to unravel you that unravels anybody. But how it looks and what the circumstances are, how long it takes, you know, and what the bumps in the road are, or if there turns out to be some recognizable cathartic event, you're like, okay. None of it's really, you know, necessary. But perhaps unavoidable, because it's the same fabric, right? I mean, if there is another person, and we don't know if there is another person, but there certainly are books written about so-called other persons that had what we might say are enviable or avoidable enlightenment experiences, right? So it's the same fabric. This existential dilemma that suggests insufficiency out of thin air must be seen through, must be pierced. And so the more intimate you become with it, you know, for a time, and maybe the time is a couple of lifetimes, years, months, hours, seconds, who knows, there's going to be some, I don't want to see this shit. I was happier, you know, it's like your classic Matrix movie, right? Don't blue pill me, man. I'm a red pill kind of guy. I just want to go back to, you know, living the imagination that I'm living in a dream world while my actual body, it, naked, is in some kind of, you know, corpuscle sucking the heat engine out of my, you know, adrenal glands so I can feed the machine.
It's environmentally friendly.
And it is environmentally friendly. And what were they feeding them? Was it just some kind of glucose serum? I mean, what were all those human beings eating?
I guess.
Just some kind of, you know, multi-mineral glucose. Like what fucking Peter Brown drinks. It's like Orgaine. Everyone was just sipping Orgaine while they were asleep in their little corpuscle feeding the machine. You know, it's not about being happy. Because happiness is for losers. Happiness is for those corpuscle people. You don't want to be no corpuscle person. You don't want to be deluded with some kind of bullshit happiness in some etheric realm while some machine is sucking the photosynthesis out of your adrenal glands. You want to be you.
You got a whole world full of people asking to be put back in.
Oh, yeah.
That made somebody famous.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
The steak, I know it's not real, but it tastes so good.
Mm-hmm. Steak. Yep. So you just have to hang with it. You know? There's no clinging or acquisition or improved point of view. There's just not. No clinging, no claiming, no improved point of view. You just hang with this. And if you find yourself making a retreat appointment, well, you'll see whether you keep the retreat appointment. No harm, no foul. You know, every encounter, even if it's, let's say, a difficult one, you know, perhaps a behaviorally challenging encounter with someone in the way that Maggie rolls, there's still plenty of, let's hope that there's plenty of love there, there's plenty of affection there. You know, there's plenty of, you know, genuine tribal warmth for the going and the getting and the being and the, you know, the whiplash and the meal prep and whatever. And as long as there's some quality of affection there, then you could say it's worth, you know, the mud and the rain and the difficult parts to just show up, you know, be counted. Right? In a sense, there's just that. It's like, this is all tribal. Yeah, I'm an asshole. But you know what? I'm just going to be counted. And it's okay if I get shredded. What the fuck?
Work.
Right?
That's all I do at work.
Yeah, see, I mean, it's the same, right?
Sometimes I fuck it up. Sometimes yeah.
You go to work.
Good, just show.
That's right. Be counted. Same thing with a meditation retreat or anything like that. You know, get on the cushion and be counted. Lend your warmth, right? Lend your metabolic heat to the reduction of suffering for all sentient beings. You know? It's like, okay, I can do that. Even if it hurts, even if it sucks, even if I'm singled out from time to time and I don't meet my own, you know, spiritual aspiration, I showed up, I was counted, I contributed to the wellness of all sentient beings. And that's like, that's cool. You don't really need anything more than that. Simple. Show up. Yeah. Just show up. Show up and fuck off. Who cares?
That's really all that life demands of you.
Pretty much, right? Show up and fuck off. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if for some strange reason, some cosmic metabolism, starts to percolate up, then you're going to be, one is going to be invited to see the, you know, oh boy, the existential reflection that this isn't about anything, neither are you, and whatever's arising in imagination is doing so involuntarily. And you're just like, okay, all right, thanks for showing that to me. I would have maybe, you know, preferred it be otherwise, but
I wouldn't describe it that way. It's more like being in a house of mirrors and every ugly mirror is me.
Oh yeah.
That's what it feels like.
Oh yeah.
That's what it felt like.
Well, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I couldn't get away from this.
No, yeah, you can't. Yeah.
And in normal life you get a lot more slack. You know,
yeah, maybe. Hard to know. I mean, you know, crackheads and Republicans. They're the same.
Fight them all the time at work.
They're the same, yeah. Fucking crackheads and Republican, man. This is ruining everything. Yeah. So, you know, when it's blended with it, when a certain kind of existential or deepening view starts to percolate through, you know, your egg starts to crack, your eggshell starts to crack, then, you know, it's going to embrace, all of the stuff of life, the stuff of self-imagery, the hall of mirrors. Yeah, sure, why not? But I would imagine that wouldn't last all that long, because it's actually way more formidable than whatever symptoms it can, you know, seduce you with. It's like, holy shit. Yeah. I mean, here it is. This is the moment that this appears to be something about something. This is the moment this appears to be about something. Not any moment prior to this one. This is the moment that this appears to be about something. This is the moment that you might or might not take delivery of being that which it's about, as in yourself. This is the moment. No other. So here you go. You're refreshed. You're off the hook. You don't have to see your parole officer anymore. You're free to see whether this is about something right now or not. If it's about something, invariably you're going to make an appointment. No harm, no foul, nothing, you know, no failure, nothing. Just like if this is about something, I'm going to make an appointment. It's unavoidable. If it's not about anything, you're still going to make an appointment. But you'll be much, much arguably less invested. Because you'll see that that appointment has nothing for you that you aren't already. There's no point in sitting in your cabin all winter long. Make an appointment. Go to town. Get some pizza. Play poker. Mix it up. This moment. How about this one? Is this about something? Just tell me, is this about anything? Fuck no. That's great.
I want nothing. Came here for nothing.
It's like if this is about something, well, I got to get to a saint as soon as possible because I'm in trouble. And that's not a bad way to live either, really. You know, why were you born? I was born to seek out and be with saints. Get busy. As even just a little bit at a time, even if you get 3 seconds here and 6 seconds there of the irrefutable revelation that this isn't about anything, you're free. It lets you go. You'll snap back, of course, into the delusion that this might be about something, and therefore I'd better get going because I have, you know, I got, there's stuff that I don't have. Someone and something other than here and now has something that I don't have that I sure as fuck need, because this is about something. Like, so that's cool. It'll snap back. But even if you get a few minutes of like, you got to be fucking kidding me, this isn't about anything, then Maggie, Ramakrishna, your Sagadatta, Jesus, what? It's not about anything. Mm-hmm. They didn't have anything. They don't have anything now. We're not suffering because we're small-minded, spiritually, ethically, morally, scientifically, educationally. No, that's not why. We suffer because we think this is about something. And then all of a sudden, you're less than. Less than what? You're never sure. But you're less than.
I keep looking up at the bald-haired baby doll clutter like this.
Yeah, that's got it.
We need that on the YouTube channel.
Really? Flatlined. Yep. So, I don't know how this works. It doesn't. It just doesn't fucking work. It can't. But you see how quickly I become imbued with the presumption that this is something. It does work. There is a way that can be discovered about the way that it works, and that I can respond to the insufficiencies that I suffer from in varying degree all throughout the day, all throughout the life, and then commit myself to working out that which I'm unsatisfied about, though I don't know what that is.
Gives you something to do.
But hit the cushion, show up, be counted. It does. Yeah. Prahlad Brahmachari, pretty free guy, said, I can't sit on my hands all day. I was like, okay. So he didn't. Ma, I can't just sit on my hands all day. Okay. Let's sing Hare Krishna. Have somebody make lunch. Good idea. One God, no two. Good idea. Lunch, Hare Krishna.
I see the worship dude.
I don't know what he was.
Whatever happened with that gentleman who had come to Wegmans?
Oh.
Is he coming back again? Or?
I would be surprised if that gentleman were to come back. He was sanguinely full of himself in a, productive, if not enviable way.
And so,
why would he submit himself to this? This is painful, dull knife lobotomy. Why would you do that if you had your shit together? No way. But
you think I had my shit together?
Sorry to convince you otherwise. But David, I think, finds this,
Yeah,
that was his third time, so.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, he probably will show up again.
Yeah.
Yeah, he likes to meander through this thing.
Yeah, the conversation went through some weird, visceral atmospheres.
Yeah.
The short time I was there. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That was Tuesday a week ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You see, you're sitting there minding your own business. You're not causing anybody any trouble. You don't want anyone to cause you any trouble. Really, you'd be happy if this would just leave you the fuck alone. And then, something shows up. Some kind of belief, some kind of idea, some kind of insufficiency, some kind of something shows up. And you're like, I got to call my broker. I got to call my travel agent. I got to call my attorney. I got to call my therapist. I got to call my sponsor. I got to pray to God. You're like, what the fuck just happened? I was minding my own business. And all of a sudden, I'm on the phone trying to work some shit out. You're like, what the fuck? So part of the lobotomy is, you know, what? Just getting used to, learning how to get used to this being just as it is, with whatever impulses show up that point you in some direction. And even more frightening than that, if they don't, if the impulses don't show up. Oh, yeah, I want to be enlightened. I want to be free. I want to be just like Ajahn. Fuck, fuck, fuck. You're like, oh, yeah? See how comfortable you are if you're just sitting there at the old kitchen table or on the toilet or wherever the hell, and the impulse is to make a phone call or reach for the cell phone or whatever the fuck we do just to, you know, out of habit. Don't show up. Don't arise. If the impulses don't arise. If you go to zero. Can you take it? Are you up for it? Going to zero? Being without impulse? Reference?
A more pertinent question is there any juice left to hold up the arbitrary grasping at creating somebody that's just not cutting it anymore?
Okay.
That's a more pertinent question.
Okay.
Am I really willing to jump through those hoops one more time?
Okay. Yeah.
It's getting old. Running on fumes.
Yeah, that's right. That's why, you know, this is not felt for them. Nobody wants to run on fumes. They don't want the lobotomy to work. They don't even want to go anywhere near the lobotomy, let alone if it starts working. Everyone loves being themselves. All their crafty self-interest and stories to tell and things to heal and, you know, education, spiritual education and stuff like that. But what happens if you run out of fumes? Here this is. What's there to heal? Nothing. What's there to know? Nothing. What kind of claim can you make? None. Who do you call? Ghostbusters, but just for fun. I don't really need to call them. What? Here it is. Here it is. Yeah, this is fucking zero, man.
Most of us can launch some kind of model life, but going to zero is a whole other story.
Oh, yeah. Why don't this talk about integration? Integrate what? The fuck are you talking about? You see, all that shit gets launched because people are after some kind of cathartic experience, some kind of cathartic spiritual experience that rattles their world somehow. And then they want to go to, like, you know, spiritual integration experts. You're like, how did that shit get launched?
Well, at least a life coach.
Or at least a life coach. Yeah. I mean, what do you integrate what? All right, that's the end of our sermon. Hey, everyone out there. Thanks for joining us. I hope you had as much fun as we did. I'll meet you for a cigarette out in the parking lot.
How many viewers we got?
Oh, there's 30. Oh, two.
Oh.
There were three. Now there's just two.
That's a big night.
No, this is really happening. This Night Sky Sangha thing, man. It's fucking going places.